Yes, so this parsha, obviously, we have the great revolt against the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a tremendous miracle to establish the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is the revolution or the revolt that Korach leads against the authority of Moshe. Now, it's very, very interesting that Korach seems to be making the argument that Judaism ought to be a democracy, meaning to say everybody is holy. Everybody heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai, and why do we need a Moshe Rabbeinu to tell us what to do? Everybody is Kadesh. Kalo Eida Kulam Kadeshim. Everyone is holy. B'teichem Hashem. Hashem is with everybody. Madua Tisnasu Al Kahal Hashem. Why do you make yourself better? So Korach, we would call, you know, an egalitarian, an advocate of democracy, religious pluralism, common sense. Judaism should be a matter of common sense. But in reality, you see a very important insight, because if you look into Chazal, Korach was totally concerned about his own covenant. Korach was not interested in giving everybody else kashivas. Remember, Rashi tells us the exact seer here. We have, Korach is Moshe Rabbeinu's cousin. Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. Kahas was the son whose children were given the responsibility of carrying the Aron HaKodesh. Kahas had four sons. These are Levi's grandsons: Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel. From Amram, we have Moshe and Aaron, as well as Miriam. From Yitzhar, we have Korach, although there are other Korach has brothers as well. Chevron, we really don't know any child he has, but Uziel has a son, Elitzapha. And Rashi explains, it's a little complicated to remember all the names here, Rashi explains that Korach had the following resentment in his heart, and that is, Amram is the oldest son of Kahas. So a Bechor gets Pishnaim, a Bechor gets a double portion. So that's why Moshe gets a job as the Melech, and Aaron gets the job as the Kohen. But Yitzhar is the second son of Kahas. Now the problem is, Elitzaphan ben Uziel was made the Nasi of Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi also had a Nasi besides Moshe and Aaron. And Kahas was jealous. If Ein Achinami, Amram, the Bechor of Kahas, got two positions, I, as the son of the next oldest son, should have gotten the position of Nasi. Now, this is a very fascinating thing, because what really is at stake is Korach's own covenant. And this is an important lesson in revolutions. When you have people who are trying to overthrow an order, and they say equality and the like, it's not really equality. They just want to replace one set of bosses with another set of bosses, usually them. I mean, consider, for example, the communist revolution. I don't want to get into all that. So what do you have? Let's overthrow the Tsar. The Tsar is so oppressive and dictatorial. So instead, you get Lenin and Stalin. Not much of an improvement, really. Or the French Revolution. It overthrew Louis the 15th, remember anymore. So you get Robespierre, who invents the guillotine, in which everybody loses their head all the time. Or the in Cambodia, you had Pol Pot, who probably may have killed 20 million people. I mean, even worse than Hitler. Baruch Hashem, there weren't too many Jews in that part of the world, so it wasn't against Klal Yisrael. But a massive, massive, massive korban to overthrow the dictatorship and replace it by communism. Right? Maybe the American Revolution is a Yetzer min HaKlal, you could debate that, and the like. But there's a tremendous remiss here, that people often speak the vocabulary of equality when bi'etzem it's their own negias and their own covet. That's the only thing that matters. Korach was consumed by his she'ifa for covet. And now again, he was a demagogue. He used a lot of arguments. He said, Tala shekulo techeles. right? It's connected to tzitzit. If you have one string of techeiles, that's all you need. But Korach says, what if your whole talis is techeiles? Why do you need tzitzit? And Moshe said, well, you need tzitzit. So what is his remez? Techeiles represents the exceptional, special part of the talis. Korach says, all of us are special, right? Like I was saying, everybody's special, right? So everybody is, what do they say? Everybody is better than average, right? They say. So this is the idea. Now, the thing is, Korach B'Emison had many, many milas. According to one medrash, Korach actually understood the miracle of Parad, not the miracle, the chok of Paraduma, the only person. Korach was phenomenally wealthy. Korach also saw with Ruach HaKodesh, again, Rashi brings all of this, that he would have descendants who would be singing to Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. And indeed, there are 11 chapters of Tehillim that are the Tehillim of B'nai Korach. And that is this Korach. This is not some other Korach. This Korach had B'nai Korach. Shmuel HaNavi, who is Shokol, in Kabbalah Shabbos, we have a pasuk from Tehillim. Moshe v'Aaron b'Kohanav. Moshe and Aaron, Kohanav over there means the servants of Hashem. Ushmuel b'Korei Shmo. So the Gemara says, you're comparing Shmuel on one side to Moshe and Aaron on the other side. We don't fully understand what this means, but there actually is a teaching in Chazal that Shmuel is Shokol k'neged Moshe v'Aaron. So Korach did what you might call a reverse engineering. He basically said, well, you know, they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So if I'm going to have such great, great righteous people, it's got to be coming from me. A little arrogant, why from him? Maybe from, you know, from somebody later. But right. So in a sense, his sense of the future of his era also turned his head, gave him a sense of gaiva, of hubris, of thinking. But what's interesting is, he didn't simply tell people, follow me, because people would say, why should we follow you? He basically said, let's not have a leader at all. Kol ha'eda kulam kadesh. So this is really a very, very important lesson about understanding the nature of demagogues, that ultimately, people who want to change things, who want to be mevatel the Torah, and they may speak the language of equality, is often really a simple question of substituting one power structure for another power structure. There was one person who understood this very, very clearly, and this is Mrs. Own Ben Peles, because Korach gathered Dasan Baviram, who were always interested in making trouble, and 250 people, and I'll talk about them in a moment. But then it just mentions, like a person from out of left field, Own Ben Peles. But when we find later the ground opens up and everybody is swallowed up, except for Korach, we'll talk about Korach. So it mentions Dasan V'Aviram, and it mentions the 250 people get burnt, but it doesn't mention Own Ben Peles anymore. What happened to Mr. Own Ben Peles? So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, on the Pasuk in Mishlei, how a woman, a wise woman, preserves her home, and a foolish woman destroys her home. That is the Pasuk in Mishlei, and the Medrash says this is going on two women, Korach's wife destroyed her home, and On Ben Peles' wife saved her home. Korach's wife kept on telling him, you know, you're much better than, you know, you deserve greatness, you deserve to be chashuv. And she egged him on, and she put gasoline on the fire to encourage him. In fact, the Medrash even mentions that one of the things that she used against him was, in Parshas Baloscha, after the Mishkan was established, the Levium had to purify themselves. And the way the Levium purified themselves was their hair had to be shaven, bald, like a melon. So he comes home totally shaven. And she makes fun of him. He says, what's going on with you? He treats you like a little baby. So Korach himself said, well, he did it to everybody. He did it to his own sons. He was following the tzibui of Hashem. So she told him, No, he did it to his sons so he could do it to you to embarrass you, which makes no sense. He did it to thousands and thousands of Levium. But she said, all of that is an excuse just to get you. So she encouraged him to hate Moshe, to engage in machlokas. On Ben Peles' wife had the opposite strategy. You know, he comes home with the equality and saying, you know, we're going to have a revolution and, you know, everyone's going to be equal and the like. And she said to him, she was very frank, she said, you know, you're an idiot. He says, if Moshe wins, you're a nobody, and if Korach wins, you'll be a nobody. So no matter who wins, you're not going to be in any position of authority. She was a realist. She says, you are not going to gain from this machlokas, no matter which side wins, even if Korach wins. See, she didn't use a frum argument. She didn't say, you know, Korach is false and Moshe is emes. She used a very practical argument. She says, I don't know. Maybe Korach's right, maybe Moshe's right. What are you going to get out of it? Nothing. And she talked him out of it. The Gemara even says that when Korach's men came to recruit him, she uncovered her hair. It's interesting that even though these are people who want to be murdered against the Torah, but they're not going to walk into a tent where a married woman's hair is uncovered. At least maybe either that was some genuine Yerush Shemayim, or they had to pretend at least that they were righteous. So the Gemara's Mishabeach Own Ben Pelas's wife as being Matzil, her husband's Min HaAveira, as opposed to Korach's wife. It's very interesting, just Agav the Agav, Derech Agav, apropos of nothing, but it just reminds me of this. You know, the Knight of Yehuda, the great Rav of Prague, so in addition to the Tshuvas Knight of Yehuda and the Chidushim, which are called Slach, Seal the Nefesh Chaya, and maybe also has Chidushim on a number of Masechtas, so he has a Sefer of Drushais that he gave. The Drushas Hatzlach. So in one of the Drushas is the hesped that he gave for his wife when she died. The eulogy, you know. And most of these hespedim are not so much talking about the person, they're explaining Mamari Chazal and Pilpulim, they're long, involved talks. But for part of it, he gets very, very personal. And he says that I would often come home angry at people. That's what he said. I was angry at people that they didn't behave properly and they were mevazei kavod atzeira, and I wanted to say things or do things. And my Rebbetzin always calmed me down. He says, he always told me there's no toelis in anger and you're not going to influence people and you'll just embarrass yourself. And Baruch Hashem, she diffused, you know, again, I mean, the Nevi Yehuda said it, she diffused the anger that I would have had by showing me that Darchei Noam was the better way of dealing with people and dealing with problems. Again, this is the difference between Own Ben Pelas's wife and Korach's wife. The wife can destroy by pushing you on to have kavod and the like, or it can lead you to accept what you have to accept. Now, it's interesting, though, the Nitziv makes the point that you see in the ultimate punishment here that the punishment is divided into two groups. Korach's family, although I'll talk about that in a moment, the ground opens up, Dasan Vaviram as well, from the tribe of Reuven, the ground opens up, and they get sucked into the ground. Okay, an amazing miracle. Hashem made a miracle to validate Moshe Rabbeinu. But the 250 gentlemen were not given their names. They wanted to bring Ketores. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let 250 people bring machtos, those are like kalim with coals and incense, and Aaron will bring ketores, and Hashem will determine who is to be chosen. And what happened was that the 250 people, like Nadav and Aviyu, a little earlier when the Mishkan was dedicated, a fire came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and burnt them up. So these are called the Nisrafim. They did not die by the ground opening up. They died by a fire coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, similar to the deaths of Nadav and Aviyu. And not only that, but their machtos, the metal vessels that they used to bring Ketores, the Torah says gets beaten into thin plates, and it actually is a cover on the Mizbeach. A cover on the Mizbeach. Now, the Nitziv wants to be mechalek between Korach, Dasan v'Aviram, and the 250 people. And that is, Korach's she'ifa was all about kavod, gaiva, arrogance. Although he cloaked it in the language of democracy and egalitarianism, but it was about kavod. The 250 had a tremendous dveikus. They wanted to connect to Hashem. They wanted the spiritual pleasure of being nana mizev hashchina. Now, it was wrong, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said only Kohanim could do the Zavaida. But the Nitziv even says they almost knew. Actually, I think he says they knew they were going to die. They knew they were going to die. But they wanted to taste the Dveikus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that moment of Kedusha. And because their motives were not self-aggrandizement and ego, but their motives were a love of Hashem and the desire to taste the Kedusha of doing the Aveda, they are honored, in a sense, by their devotion, becomes a chelik of the Mizbech. Meaning, the purpose of the tzipui is not only, tzipui means the covering, is not only the negative, as a warning, although the Torah makes that point, a warning that anyone that wants to challenge the rights of Kohanim better be careful. Remember this tzipui and what this represented. It's not only a warning, which it is, but it is also a tribute and an honor to people who loved Hashem so much that they were willing to die al kiddush Hashem. And that's why, in a sense, their names are not mentioned. And the reason is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to embarrass them, meaning Hashem spares their dignity because there was a tzad of Kedusha in their action that was not the case for Korach and Dathan v'Aviram. But there are two simple questions that one has to know. Number one, strangely enough, again, Rashi makes the point, the Gemara makes the point, how did Korach die? You know, it's an amazing thing. You'd figure, you know, every second grader would say, first grader would say, Korach died because the ground opened up. Truth of the matter is, the Chumash does not tell you exactly how Korach died. Because we, well, let's look at the exact language of the pasuk. Yeah, this is in Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31. Right after Moshe warns people, get away from there because something's going to happen. Vayehi kichaloso ledaber es kol advarim ha'ela. After Moshe finished his warning, vatibakaho adam asher tachteyam, the ground opened up. Vatiftach ha'aretz es pia, the earth opened up its mouth like a ravenous animal swallowing. Vativla osam v'yaspateyam, it swallowed them. Them is ambiguous. Their houses, all of the, this includes the slaves, the family members of Korach, they entered the ground alive. So the truth of the matter is, it does not say explicitly what happened to Korach, and there are actually a number of opinions in Chazal, and some of the opinions are not so easy to understand. The easiest opinion to understand is that Korach suffered a double fate, meaning Dathan v'Aviram and Korach's family, they died by being swallowed by the ground. The 250 people died from the fire coming from Hashem. Some say Korach was both Minasrafim, he was burnt, and after he was burnt, because he was one of them being Makrif Ketores, and then he was swallowed. In other words, he had double onshim. Why did he have a double onish? Again, like the Nitziv, it's not so clear to me why he would be burnt, because the burning was a sign of L'shem Shemayim, but this Medrash apparently is not going with the Nitziv's Svara, because each one would say that Korach got off easy, because the people who were burnt would say to Hashem and Shemayim, why does Korach get exempt from the punishment of burning, which is so painful? And Le'idach Gisa, if Korach would be burnt, the people who were swallowed would say, why does he get off from the punishment of being swallowed by the ground? So Mimela, Korach has to get all of the punishments that everybody's getting, because he is the instigator. This is the main view of Chazal in Maseches Sanhedrin. But there is another view that actually says, and this is hard to understand, the logic of this, Korach is the one person who didn't die that day, the one person in the rebellion who didn't die that day. But later on in the Chumash, it is recorded that people rebelled, even after the Korach story. They rebelled against Moshe, saying, all of us are dying, you know, how could this go on? And there was a magefa, there was a plague, in which 14,000 people died. And was only stopped when Aaron brought Ketores to stop the Magefa. So according to one Chazal, Korach died in the Magefa along with 14,000 other people. In other words, very schwer. There was nothing special about his death. He died like a bunch of regular people. I mean, obviously, that itself was a miracle of the Magepa, but Korach wasn't singled out in any way. That's a difficult thing to understand. I mean, Korach just died like part of a whole big group? Well, first of all, you think about this. How does Korach feel when he sees everybody? I mean, what goes through his head? Everybody that participated in his revolt, you know, dies, either by the ground opening up or by the fire. But somehow, Hashem didn't take him. How do you process that information? Is it a sign? Well, is it a sign? Gee, I must be somebody special. But then, why did they die if they were supporting me? So maybe in the perverted mind of a Korach, it could very well be, well, they didn't have proper motivation. I had proper motivation. Maybe it's the ultimate insult to Korach that a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you're not even going to die in a special way. You're going to die anonymously with a whole bunch of people. We're not even going to honor you with a special miracle. Maybe that's the ultimate put down. You know, you don't even get a special death. You just die anonymously with everybody else. There is another view in the Medrash, a very strange view that goes to the other extreme. Korach did not die with this group, but he died the next day, and Hashem opened up the ground privately for him, meaning he got a private miracle, as if to say, this makes the opposite point. I'm not just going to kill you as part of the group, I'm going to do a special thing for you, right? So it goes in two opposite svaras. Does Hashem show a special einish for Korach? Or fakert, is the ultimate mussar to Korach is you don't even get a special death. You simply die with everybody else. But there is another thing to be considered, and that is, in Parshas Korach, it seems to indicate Korach's whole family, except for Korach himself as the ambiguity, the ground opened up. And it doesn't make any special exception for his sons. Now, even lefi pshuto, it couldn't be that everybody was destroyed, because we know Korach had descendants. So the emes is, in Parshas Pinchas, it says, B'nei Korach lo mesu. It's not in Parshas Korach, it's Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas says, B'nei Korach lo mesu. What do you mean, lo mesu? So Rashi brings a chazal that says they did fall into the earth, but makom nispatser lahem b'gehenim. There was a higher part of Gehenim in which they were saved, because at the last moment, as they were falling in, they did tshuva in their heart. Now, a higher place in Gehenim, you know, that doesn't really explain how they survived. Gehenim is still Gehenim. It makes no difference if you're deep Gehenim or not so deep Gehenim. So the emes is, there are very deep mystical meanings here, but I just want to tell you that according to Rabbeinu Bechaya says in Parshas Pinchas that the word Gehenim in Chazal, in this passage, is not literal. Gehenim just means the place that was set aside for Korach's punishment, which is the ground opening. And he learns it very simple. They fell in a cliff. The ground opens up. They fall in. But they were mad. They managed to hold on to a cliff and climb out of the cliff. And they were saved. Meaning, we're not, according to Rabbeinu Bechaya, although there are other explanations, we are not dealing with a mystical concept of multiple levels of Gehenim. We are dealing with a simple practical idea that they managed to hold on to a ledge, which enabled them to physically climb out, and as a result, they could have children, and those children be Shmuel HaNavi and the Bnei Korach in the Beis Hamikdash. But it's interesting, I saw, don't tell anybody, I saw from the Babich Rebbe, don't report me, that he says a very interesting, he actually brings it from an earlier Sefer. I was not familiar with the Sefer that he brought it from. Because the question is this: if Bnei Korach simply didn't die, they just climbed out of the pit, why isn't that reported in Parshas Korach itself? Because you have to understand, in Parshas Pinchas is giving us a census of the Jewish people 40 years later, before they enter Eretz Yisrael. And that's when it's reported. B'chayre, the Korach thing happened much earlier, and the B'nai Korach were saved much earlier. So the logical place for B'nai Korach Lo Mesa actually should be here. So he brings from a sefer that this was not immediate. The truth of the matter is, B'nai Korach were underground for 40 years, meaning to say, in Parshas Korach, it says, they all fell into the ground, except for Korach. Only later, when they were counting them in the 40th year, they kind of crawled out of the ground, B'nai Korach Lo Mesa, which means they were gone. Everyone thought they were dead. Everyone thought they died with Korach. It's very, very meduyek. That's why B'nai Korach Lo Mesa doesn't appear here. Rather, it says Fakert. The lashon of the pasuk is Eis kol ha'adam asher l'Korach. The earth covered them up, and they were lost from the congregation. That included the B'nai Korach. But now, how did they live? Again, it was a nesesh, whatever it is, Hashem gave them sustenance. But for 39 years, they were underground. They couldn't come up. And they were only able to come up later in Parshas Pinchas. It's a gewaldige diuk, but it's a little frightening to think that for 39 years they were under the ground there. Okay. Now, and of course, let me say that you know, if you remember the Book of Shmuel, when Chana has a son after many years of infertility, the son is Shmuel. So in Perek Beis, we have the Shira of Chana, the song of thanksgiving that Chana gave. That is read. That is the Haftorah. The story of Shmuel plus the Shira of Chana is the Haftorah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Because according to Chazal, Chana became pregnant on Rosh Hashanah. So Chana says at the end of her Shira, Hashem meimis umechaya. Hashem kills, but he gives life. Morid Sha'ol, he brings people to the depths of Gehenna. Vayyaal, and brings them up. According to Chazal, she is referring to her husband's ancestors, the B'nai Korach, who were in the ground. They were in the Gehenim, so to speak, and Hashem brought them up. And it's a reference to the very fact that had they died, had they not come up, then there never would have been any chance that I would have a son, Shmuel, and the like. Right. So the Shira of Chana is merames to the Hatzalah of B'nai Korach. And again, let me remind you as well that the kapitel of Tehillim that we recite seven times before Tekiyah Shofar is Lamnatzeach Livnei Korach Mizmor. And one of the reasons why we recite a Mizmor of B'nai Korach is that from the B'nai Korach we learn out the Koach of Tshuva. That even when Hashem was geyser destruction, and even in the very middle of the destruction, it's happening, they're being sucked in, the hearer of tshuva can give you forgiveness. Now that doesn't always mean you're going to be rescued, but if not in this world, in Olam Haba, but that received from B'nai Korach, a person could do tshuva the very last second that they think they're going to live. And that tshuva can sometimes give them life, and it will certainly bring them to Chaye Olam Haba. Okay, so that's why we recite it on Rosh Hashanah, which is a time in which we begin Tshuva. It's the beginning of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Rosh Hashanah itself is not the Yuchat for Tshuva. The connection of Rosh Hashanah to Tshuva is not in its Rosh Hashanah aspect, because Rosh Hashanah is a day of coronation. But what makes it a day of tshuva is because it's Aseret Yemei Tshuva from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. It's interesting. It's not the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah that's connected to tshuva. It is the fact that it's one of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva that connects it to tshuva. I think I may have mentioned, though, it's interesting, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim, once speculated that the Rambam's Hilchos Tshuva is 10 prakim. And you know, why 10 prakim? Well, you never know. Why any number of prakim of the Rambam, we really don't know. But he wanted to say, maybe the Rambam was merames, that a person should learn one parak of Hilchos Tshuva every one of the 10 days of starting from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. That was a remez of 10 prakim in Hilchos Teshuvah. But again, I mean, you know, who knows? Why are there 18 prakim in Hilchos Ishus? You know, so I mean, I don't think we have a teretz for every situation that way. Okay, so now let me deal with a chronological problem. And again, I'm just going to give you a kasha without a teretz. That is, when did the rebellion of Korach occur? Now, let me just remind you a little bit of some sequencing. We were at Har Sinai for almost a year. We came to Har Sinai, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, right after 3 months after we left Mitzrayim, and we didn't leave till the end of Iyar. So we were there more than 11 months. But then we travel, and we had the Shaila of Kibros HaTaiva, the Shaila of the quail, and other arguments. And then we come to a city called Chatzeros, and Chatzeros is where Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, and she was stricken with Saras, and in Chatzeros she had to be there for a week, Chutz L'machana, and the Torah mentions we did not move from Chatzeros until Miriam died. L'chavod Miriam, Hashem said, all of Am Yisrael, instead of saying we'll move ahead and give her a guard, whatever it would be, all of Klal Yisrael remained in place for 7 days until Miriam was able to move. From Chatzeros, we came to the Midbar Paran, the Paran Midbar, and from there we sent the Meraglim. And then we have the story of Korach. But Korach is not given any particular location. Where did Korach happen? We know Miriam's Lashon Hara was Chatzeros. We know the Shiluach HaMeraglim was in the Paran Desert, and the particular part of the Paran Desert was called Kadesh Barnea. That was the town from which... And then we have Korach. So, the pashtus of the Chumash itself is that Korach happened in the same place as the Meraglim. It's after the Meraglim, so right after the Meraglim. And in fact, the Ramban says, Beferish, that it was the Meraglim, the Chet HaMeraglim, that gave Korach more fuel for his fire. Because Korach can now say to them, hey, what has this Moshe Rabbeinu done for you? Because of him, we're going to have to wander around in the desert for 40 years. The Ramban makes the point that before the Gezeirah of the Meraglim, nobody would have listened to Korach to be unsatisfied with Moshe, because they think they're going to go to Eretz Yisrael in a week. Right? So the Ramban learns Beferish, and again, this is consistent with the Ramban's overall Shita, that he does not like to take anything out of chronological order. We simply follow the Torah Keseder. The Maisa of the Meraglim was in Midbar Paran, Kadesh Barnea. They're still in Kadesh Barnea. And this is where we have Korach. Rashi, by implication, learns the same way, but I'm going to throw you out a kasha to think about. Because when Korach rebels, right, the Torah says, Moshe fell on his face. Moshe fell on his face to pray to Hashem. And Rashi says, why is Moshe so devastated now? Because Moshe says, this is the fourth big aveira that Am Yisrael is committing. We have the Chet HaEgel, is aveira number one. And then we have the Chet where they complained about the man, and Hashem gave them the quail. They didn't have emuna in Hashem. And Chet number three is the Meraglim. And Korach is Chet number four. And generally speaking, there's kind of a klal. Hashem may forgive three major chatayim, but the fourth one may be unforgivable. So you see, according to Rashi's Cheshbon, Rashi says, Beferish, Korach is the Chet HaRevi'i, which means Rashi here positions Korach after the Meraglim, which follows the Shita of the Ramban. All right? But here, we do have a little bit of a problem. Because if you look at, and again, I'm just going to give you this as a kasha. If you look at Rashi in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, so, the Pasuk says in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, Eila HaDevarim, these are the words that Moshe spoke to all of Bnei Yisrael, Eber LeYarden, then it mentions a whole bunch of places, Bamidbar, Barara. So Rashi explains that Moshe is giving his speech in only one place, Arbos Moav. And when it mentions all of these place names, It is not where he gave the speech, but it's about what he gave the speech, meaning the averos they did in this place, and in this place, and in this place, and in this place, giving them teichacha, giving them musar, giving them hadracha, because he's about to die. This is the last month before his death, okay? So that's how Rashi understands it, meaning instead of interpreting the pasuk, these are the words that Moshe said in place A, B, C, D, and Z. It means, no, these are the words that Moshe said in one place, Arvos Moav, about A, B, C, D, and E. And each of these places is a remez to an avera. So, for example, when it says, Mul Suf, he is mochiach them, that even by the Yam Suf, people were afraid to jump in. They didn't have faith in Hashem. Paran is the meraglim, because the meraglim were sent from the desert of Paran, in particular the city of Kadesh Barnea. Then it mentions Tofel Volava. Now here Rashi has a problem. There is no place in the Chumash that's called Tofel and Lavan. So Rashi says that is a remez to their complaint about the man, because Tofel can mean tasteless. And the man was white. The man's color was white. And they complained that the man had no taste to them, although the man could taste like whatever they wanted. So Tofel V'lovan is a remez to the man. But then it says, and chaseros. So Zakt Rashi gives two pshatim. What happened at chaseros? This is a teichacha about Korach, the Maise Korach that happened in chaseros. Now, you got a big problem here. The Maisa of Korach, now Rashi's second pshat is the Maisa of Miriam that happened in Chaseros. Now, the second pshat works absolutely perfectly. Because indeed, the Torah tells me beferish. The Torah tells me beferish that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe in the city of Chaseros, or the oasis of Chaseros. And we waited a week, and then we went to Midbar Paran. So Memela, Chaseros is the Maisa of Miriam. But Rashi's first pshat, that the Maisa of Korach happened in Chaseros, that's very schwer. Because if the Maisa of Korach happened in Chaseros, Chaseros is where we were before we came to Kadesh Barnea and Midbar Paran. Eibazoi, that would imply that Rashi's shita was that the Maisa Korach happened before Meraglim. Now, as an etzem dekashita, there are such shitas. In other words, there are vadai rishainim and chazals that indeed say that ein muktam u'mu'ucher b'torah. And in fact, the only reason why, in other words, Korach happened before Meraglim, and the reason they say, why do they say that? I mean, why would you want to say that? The reason they want to say that is because we have a klal that the Shechina did not speak to Moshe from the Chet HaMeraglim onwards until the 40th year. So if you're putting Korach after Meraglim, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to Moshe. So because of this, there are Rishonim that say Korach is before Meraglim. There are such shitas. And why did the Torah write it afterwards? Because the Torah wanted to connect Tzitzis. I'm sorry, the Torah wanted to connect Miriam to Meraglim, as if to say that Miriam should have, the Meraglim should have taken Musar from Miriam. So the Etzem Shita is not a problem, but I just want to point out that there is a stira in Rashi, because Rashi in Korach Vadai learns that Korach was after the Meraglim, but the first pshat of Rashi in Sefer Devarim does learn that the Maisa of Korach happened in Chaseros, which is before Meraglim. So it's not really a stira, though. The reason it's not a stira, the Maral says, because Rashi does bring you two pshatim about Chaseros. So basically, what you have is the following. It is not so difficult to say that Rashi in Devarim is giving you both Midrashim, but Rashi elsewhere is following the shita of the Medrash that is more Pshuto Shel Mikra. Because Rashi can choose from many Midrashim. Pshuto Shel Mikra is, of course, Korach happened after Meraglim. So that's the shita that Rashi is Tofes, and that's the shita that Rashi that the Ramban follows as well. But I just want you to remember, when you learn Sefer Devarim, the mashmos of Rashi is Fakir. Although some want to be Miyashiv, some want to say that maybe they came back to Chatzeres a second time, meaning right after the Chatzeres is Miriam, Paran is Shiluach Meraglim, but then it says after the Gezerah we wandered around a little bit, so maybe we wandered ourselves back to Chatzeres a second time, and that's where Korach was. It's Shach, so I don't want to learn that way, but it's a little schwer because there's another Rashi that says we remained in Kadesh Barnea for 19 years, which means it seems to be we didn't move around after the Chet HaMeraglim, unless you're going to posit that Korach happened 19 years later. Maybe. Well, once you're saying it's after the Meraglim, maybe it could have been many years after. And of course, according to what I told you in Lubavitcher Rebbe, that would cut down on the amount of time that B'nai Korach had to be in the ground. So maybe you're marviach that. So the chronology is not so pashut, but be it as it may, so we wind up with Buluin, some people who swallowed up. We wind up with Serufim, and the Netziv says those people are L'shem Shemayim. The B'nai Korach on one hand survive, and Korach himself, there's a lot of ambiguity what exactly happened to Korach. There was also a big machlokes in Chazal. Did Korach eventually get Olam Haba? There is a Gemara in Bava Basra that describes Korach as burning in Gehenna like a piece of meat over a barbecue. Every 30 days it gets turned over, and they say Moshe Emes. Right, so what we sing in Simchas Torah is taken from Korach's words in Gehenna. Moshe Emes v'say Rasa Emes. Moshe is true and his Torah is true. So there is such a view about Korach. On the other hand, we don't know, because there are other views in Chazal that, in spite of the fact that Korach was not zeicha to live like his sons lived, but in the zechus of his children, Korach was taken out of Gehenna, and Korach was zeicha to a chelik of Olam Haba based on the principle of bra mezakeh liavua, that a child can do mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim that bring a parent or a grandparent out of Gehenna. And some have a middle pshat that although Korach was not zeicha to Olam Haba, but he will be zeicha to Tchias HaMesim, meaning right now it's kind of not, but there will be an ultimate. The Arizal says Korach will have a Tchias HaMesim. So again, who knows? And I don't know. Yeah, I can't give you, what's the Psak Halacha, We don't know what Hashem did, but Chazal had different deis as to the future of Korach. Now, the final test that is done is more of a benign test, and that is the Nasi of every Shevet plus Aaron takes a mateh, takes a staff. This staff is placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and there's a miracle, so to speak. Everyone has their name on the staff, and the mateh of Aaron produces almonds and growth and the like, and this was a divine sign. And the Gemara indicates that during the Mikdash Rishon, this matah was kept in the Kodesh HaKadoshim as a sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu choosing Aaron. Now one might ask Akasha, and it's not so pashut, what was the need? What needed to be proven at this point? I mean, Korach attacks Moshe, he gets, he or whatever people get swallowed up. The 250 people essentially were attacking Aaron. They wanted Aaron's job. They get burnt up. So what needs to be proven? So one might suggest that the concept is that people needed to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's choice of Aaron is not simply because he wants to punish other people as being unworthy. Right? The idea that the people who are Makriv Ketoros get destroyed, that doesn't necessarily show Hashem loves Aaron. That just shows Aaron isn't as bad as these other people. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show that the Bechira of Aaron is not because of the rejection of others, but intrinsically there is a Maila of Aaron that he deserves to be a Kohen. So to say we know Aaron is the Kohen because everybody else died would not be the same as saying he was chosen because of his greatness and because of his Kedusha. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to indicate that Aaron is not simply better than the alternatives, the lesser of two evils, but rather intrinsically there was a bechira of Aaron as an act of love, and that was so important that that was actually kept in the Kodesh HaKadoshim together with a jar of the man. A lot of things were kept in the Kodesh HaKadoshim: a jar of the man, the mata of Aaron that had shkedim, the Shemen HaMishcha of Moshe Rabbeinu, as well as the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. And you might be thinking, like, what is the purpose of having stuff in the Kodesh HaKadosh? I mean, nobody ever sees it. But you know, that's absolutely not the case. It mentions during the Bayis Rishon, every one of the Shalosh Regalim, when thousands, maybe millions, of Jews were in the Beis HaMikdash, maybe not all at the same time, but over the 7 days of Chag, they would open up, the Kohanim would open up the parochas of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And you know, all the psachim of the Beis HaMikdash are aligned, so even if you're standing outside, right, if you're looking into an open doorway, if you have good eyesight, you can see all the way there. And nobody would walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you're not allowed to do that. But they would look at the Kodesh HaKadoshim and they would see all of these different things. In fact, the Gemara tells us that on top of the Aron HaKodesh, there were the two Kruvim, the shape of two cherubic angels. And when Am Yisrael was in God's good graces, the angels would embrace. And when Klal Yisrael was not in a good place with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the angels would turn away. And it says at the moment of the Churban, the angels were embracing, that Hashem loved us at that moment. But typically during the Regalim, the angels would be embracing, and the Kohanim would say, Ru'u chibaschem lifnei hamakom, see how beloved you are. Now the Emes of the Gemara and Yuma ask a lot of kashas here. L'chaira, how could that be? How could we posit at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash people could see the Aron? Mimanavshach. In the Mikdash Sheni there was no Aron, because the Aron had been concealed by King Yoshiyahu before the Churban Bayis Rishon. And even at the Churban Bayis Rishon there was no Aron, because before the Babylonians destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, Yoshiyahu had the Aron removed and hidden. I think so the Gemara has a problem, but in terms of principle, the parochas was open for people to look. So there was a point that people could see the man, and they could see the mata, and they could see all of these other things. Okay, we'll stop here. You have a good day.